Hey everybody, Josh Peck here. We're going to be doing something a little bit different today. We got no intro. We have no CBD and Kratom ads, although if you do still want to pick those up, you can go to dailyrenegade.com or click on the link in the description below. So we're going to do something a little bit different today that I'm kind of excited about. So for those of you who are aware, at the time of this recording, I am at the beautiful Radisson Hotel in Branson, Missouri. We are doing the Defender Conference 2019. Lots of fun. It's a really big turnout. I'm excited about it. And part of what I'm going to be doing is participating in a panel discussion for an episode of a show called Paranormal that's hosted by Dr. Michael Heiser, and several other amazing people are involved in that show. So I'm honored to be a part of it. Something we're going to be talking about is Isaac Newton and his prophecies about, you know, the world ending in 2060, how he looked at the Bible, how he looked at prophecy, things like that. Really interesting subject, something that I've been interested in for a long time, though haven't really had a whole lot of opportunity to really delve into. But now I have that opportunity, so I'm really excited about it. I wanted to do kind of like a series of videos on this topic because, for one thing, it helps me prepare. So that's always good. But also it helps get the information out to you. Now, I do want to say, make sure you check out Paranormal. It's spelled exactly how it sounds. It's not paranormal, it's Paranormal, like peer-reviewed research. Paranormal. Make sure you check out that podcast. It is absolutely excellent. And so, yeah, let's get started. Now, in 1704, Isaac Newton predicted the world will end in 2060. But what does that exactly mean? So we're going to look at an article that comes from openculture.com if you want to check it out. But you know, we've become used to pronouncements of doom, you know, from scientists predicting the sixth mass extinction, you know, climate change, you know, due to measurable effects of climate change and stuff like that. And even from religionists declaring that the apocalypse is going to come at any moment due to the sin that we're offending God with. And it's almost impossible to imagine that these two groups of people could agree on anything other than the ominous portent of their respective messages. But in the early days, of the scientific revolution, the days of Shakespeare contemporary Francis Bacon and later 17th century Descartes, in these days, it was not at all unusual to find both kinds of reasoning, or even unreasoning, if you look at it that way, in the same person, along with beliefs in magic, divination, astrology, all that kind of stuff. Yet, even with all this going on, with all these thoughts and practices, Sir Isaac Newton stood out as a particularly odd coexistence of esoteric biblical prophecy, occult beliefs, and a rigid formal mathematics that not only adhered to the inductive scientific method, but also expanded its potential by applying general axioms to specific cases. But many of Newton's general principles would seem totally inimical to the naturalism of most of physicists today. It'd just be you know, out there. As he was formulating the principles of gravity and three laws of motion, Newton also sought the legendary philosopher's stone and attempted to turn metal to gold. So, you know, to modern physicists today, that would seem very strange. Although, as I've talked about before, that's essentially what is happening at the LHC at CERN. They're in a sense changing one material to another. You know, through a proton collision, they can bring a Higgs boson into existence. You know, it's not that you combine two protons and you know, it's not like the pieces of the protons are still in the Higgs boson. These are two entirely different particles. But that's a whole other conversation. Now, moreover, the devoutly religious Newton wrote theological treatises interpreting Bible prophecies and predicting the end of the world. And the date that he arrived at was the year 2060. So, Newton seems, writes science blog Another Pale Blue Dot, quote, as confident of his prediction in this realm as he was in the rational world of science, end quote. So in 1704, letter exhibited at Jerusalem's Hebrew University. Newton describes his reconning as this, quote, "So then the time, times, and half a time are 42 months, or 1,260 days, or 3 years and a half, reconning 12 months to a year and 30 days to a month, as was done in the calendar of the primitive year. And the days of short-lived beasts being put for the years of lived kingdoms, the period of 1260 days, if dated from the complete conquest of the three kings, AC 800, will end AC 2060. It may end later, but I see no reason for its ending sooner," end quote. Now, Newton further demonstrated his confidence in the next sentence, writing that his intent, quote, "though not to assert," end quote, an answer, should, in any event, quote, "put a stop to the rash conjectures of fanciful men who are frequently predicting the time of the end," end quote. Isn't that interesting that that was going on in his time and we still see that today? It seems like every couple of years, every couple of months, really, you get somebody new online that's saying that the world, you know, the rapture is going to happen, or Jesus is returning in the following month. But how did he arrive at this number? How did Newton arrive at this number? Newton applied a rigorous method. So if you have patience for like an exhaustive description of how he worked out his prediction using the Book of Daniel, you can read a description linked at OpenCulture. I believe that's what it was. OpenCulture.com. Is that what I said? Yeah. OpenCulture.com. There's in the article that we're looking at today, which is titled "In 1704, Isaac Newton Predicts the World Will End in 2060." There's a link, and if you click on that link, you can read one there by historian of science Stephen Snoblin. And we might look at some of Snoblin's stuff in another video. But he also points out how widespread the interest in Newton's odd beliefs have become, reaching across every continent. Though scholars have known about the about this side of the Enlightenment giant for quite a while. But now for a sense of the exacting yet completely bizarre flavor of Newton's prophetic calculations, you can see another Newton letter at the that we can look at here, and it's transcribed. I have this transcribed for you, so let me see if screen share will work here. Let's see what we got. Yeah, there we go. Wasn't for sure if screen share was going to work, because without having my Stream Deck thing, a lot of the functions usually available in my OBS studio here aren't functioning. But anyway, so here's a transcript. So here, prop one, the 2300 prophetic days did not commence before the rise of the little horn of the he-goat. Those days, did not commence after the destruction of Jerusalem and temple by the Romans, AD 70. The time, times, and half a time did not commence before the year 800, in which the Pope's supremacy commenced. They did not commence after the reign of Gregory the Seventh in 1084. The 1290 days did not commence before the year 842. They did not commence after the reign of Pope Gregory the Seventh, 1084. The difference between the 1290 and 1335 days are a part of the 7 weeks. Therefore, the 2300 years do not end before the year 2132, nor after 2370. The time, times, and half time do not end before 2060, nor after 2344. And lastly, the 1290 days do not begin. This should read end. So the 1290 days do not end before 2090. Newton might mean 2132, nor after 1374. So Newton probably means 2374. You know, some of it's an old document, so some of it's kind of hard to get a handle on. But so that's what he was looking at. Now, These editorial insertions are Professor Snobelin's insertions, who thinks that the letter dates, quote, from after 1705, end quote, and that, quote, the shaky handwriting suggests a date of composition late in Newton's life, end quote. But whatever the exact case, we see him much less certain in this. So Newton pushes around some other dates, you know, 2344, 2090, or 2132, 2374. All of them seem arbitrary, but, quote, given the niche roundness of this number and the fact that it appears in more than one letter, end quote, 2060 has become his most memorable dating for the apocalypse. And that quote was from Motherboard. So it's important to note that Newton didn't believe the world would end exactly, in the sense of cease to exist or burn up in holy flames. You know, his end times philosophy resembles that of a surprising number of current day evangelicals, that Christ would return and reign for a millennium. The Jewish diaspora would return to Israel and would, as he wrote, set up, quote, a flourishing and everlasting kingdom, end quote. So we hear such statements often from televangelists, you know, school boards, governors, presidential candidates, all that kind of stuff. Now, as many people have argued, despite Newton's conception of his scientific work as a bulwark against other theologies, it ultimately became a foundation for deism and naturalism that has allowed scientists to make accurate predictions for hundreds of years. So 20th century physics may have shown us a much more radically unstable universe than Newton ever imagined, but his theories are, as Isaac Asimov would put it, quote, not so much wrong as incomplete, end quote, and still essential to our understanding of certain fundamental phenomena. But as fascinating and curious as Newton's other interests may be, there's no more reason to credit his prophetic calculation than those of the Millerites, Harold Camping, or any other apocalyptic doomsday sect. At least that, again, is the opinion of the author here in Open Culture. Now, there's another one that I wanted to look at. Let me see how we're doing on time. We're going to do this for members only. So, members only to Daily Renegade. We have a lot more information to get through, almost an hour's worth of information to get through for the rest of Isaac Newton's 2060 prophecy and what it means for us today, other ways of interpreting it or looking at it, a lot about Isaac Newton himself, and why we should be paying attention to this today. But we're going to do that for members only. So if you haven't had a chance, go to dailyrenegade.com, become a member. It's only $10 a month or $100 a year. It's absolutely worth it because then you get full Peck reports, you get full episodes of every show we put out. We got about a dozen shows with amazing hosts like Gary Wayne, Ryan Peterson, Brian Melvin, Cody Peck, Christina Peck. You know, we got the whole Peck clan involved in it, and many others. Jared Cressman, Tom Dunn from Through the Black, they have a show on there. Lots of stuff and more to come. We have a lot more things to come. We're actually building what we're calling The Vault, which is going to be a video repository of people who don't necessarily have original shows with Daily Renegade, but who are going to be offering their content to us for members only. So that way you will have a place where it's all in one place. You don't have to go searching for it, but where you can get some of your favorite videos from your favorite authors, researchers, speakers, that kind of thing. So we are currently building that, but again, that is going to be a members only benefit. So go and become a member, $10 a month or $100 a year. The $100 a year is the better deal. That is the better deal because then you get 2 months for free. You just got to pay for it once and you don't have to think about it for a whole other year. Amazing. So, you know, instead of wasting money on Netflix, come over to us. Come over to Daily Renegade. It's dailyrenegade.com. If you're viewing this on YouTube, you can click on the link in the description below and get your membership there, or just go straight to dailyrenegade.com. We are making some improvements on the website right now, so hang with us for a little bit while we get all that sorted out. It is going to be phenomenal when it is all done, so make sure you do that. All right, so we are going to say goodbye to Facebook and YouTube. Thank you so much. If you haven't had a chance, make sure you subscribe to this channel, click the bell for notifications, follow us on Facebook. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, Brighteon Minds. We're basically everywhere. So make sure you find us there. You can also find us on BitChute and Steemit and DTube, and we're everywhere. So make sure you do that. And until next time, thank you so much. Take care. God bless. Speaking of Stephen Snowbillin, he has an article that can be found at isaac-newton.org, and it's just titled Statement on the Date 2060. So he writes, on February 22nd, 2003, the Daily Telegraph from London, England, published a front page story announcing Isaac Newton's prediction that the world would end in 2060. The story was based on interviews with Snowbillin and Malcolm Newham, the producer of the BBC Two documentary Newton, the Dark Heretic, which was first shown on March 1st, 2003. Snowbillin was asked to make himself available to the media because some of his academic research on Newton's prophecy and heretical theology was used in the documentary. And since he was not only interviewed for the documentary both in Jerusalem and Cambridge, but also shown the manuscript containing the 2060 date in Jerusalem. Now, although the 2060 date was not news to the small community of scholars who study Newton's theology, this was the first time the wider public became aware of Newton's prophetic views. So over the next few days, the news spread around the globe and was covered in newspapers, making the front pages in Israel and Canada on February 23rd and 24th, respectively, on the radio, on TV, and on a plethora of internet news sites. So the story was covered on the internet in all major European languages, from English, French, Spanish, to Hungarian, Romanian, even Russian. Websites in South America, South Africa, Australia, China, Vietnam, and India also covered this story. And many of these websites picked up the story second and third hand. Several of them treated the story as kind of a joke, with one site including a picture of a mushroom cloud, which was an image that's more readily associated with Einstein, with the caption, quote, "Party like it's 2060," end quote. So for almost a week, Snowbillin says that he received a barrage of requests for interviews from the media, CBC Radio and TV, Global TV, and the Maritimes, Agent France Press, and which the largest talk show in Chicago, and even the Russian section of Radio Free Europe, which aired the interview in Russian translation. So he tried to use this unexpected opportunity to fill in more details about Newton's theological and prophetic thought, and to point out that Newton's apocalyptic thought was not just doom and destruction. Now, although there was a sensational element in the way that the news was covered by many media organizations at the time, the story has performed a really important role in alerting the public to the fact that Isaac Newton was not merely a scientist, but was a theologian and a prophetic exegete, not to mention also an alchemist. Now, the public was therefore challenged to reconceptualize Newton in all his complexity. The BBC Two documentary, with its visual impact and much greater detail, challenged its viewers in an even more profound way. So that brings up the question, why did Newton's prediction for 2060 become such a big news story? One reason why Newton's, what Snowbillin refers to as Newton's heresy, apocalyptic thought and prediction about the 2060 date, became news in February of 2003 is because most members of the media and the public had no idea that Newton was anything other than a scientist. This came as big news. For many, this revelation that Newton was a passionate believer who, took biblical prophecy seriously came as a shock. So it seems that both the media and the general public have a notion of Newton as a rational scientist that makes it difficult to absorb the knowledge that Newton was practicing both alchemy and prophetic exegesis, studies that many see as antithetical to the enterprise of science. But the media has perpetuated a myth that science and religion are inherently in conflict. But the fact is, sometimes they are. It depends on the interpretation of the science, and it depends on the belief. But religion has also often stimulated the development of science. You know, and actually, it's not really the case that physicists today are all non-spiritual. You know, a lot of times they'll say that. Like, a lot of times, it seems like the grand majority of physicists or scientists are materialists. But I interviewed Dr. Ronald Mallett. He's been studying black holes and time travel, and you know, he's had documentaries made about him. I interviewed him for a book that I did a while ago for Unraveling the Multiverse. And in that, I asked him. I said, "Is it true that you know?" Because he's a Christian. Dr. Ronald Mallett is a Christian. And I asked him, "Is that difficult? You know, is it true that?" You know, it's really hard to do anything in science and be a Christian. And he said, no, that's basically, he said, that's media hype. He said that when you get into, you know, the scientific field, even, you know, take physicists, take any group, you kind of get a little of everything, just like you would in just the general population. If you take 100 people out of the general population, you're going to get some Christians, you're going to get some New Agers, you're going to get some atheists, you're going to get some Buddhists, you know. He said it's a lot like that. So there's a lot more Christians today in science than we are led to believe, which is encouraging. But it's just that they don't get the airtime. He said that's why it seems like there's like no Christians in science today. There are, they just don't get the airtime. The people that do get the airtime are the materialists, sometimes even the New Agers. That has risen significantly the past couple of decades, the infiltration of New Age into quantum physics. And many quantum physicists are falling for it. Not all of them, but quite a few of them. But they still consider themselves as non-religious or non-spiritual. But they constantly interpret their own findings or the findings of other physicists in these weird New Agey kind of ways. So you see that quite a bit. So it's not really the case that, you know, all scientists today are materialist and are completely against Christianity. There is some of that, but, you know, the media hypes this up. So, now the story about Newton predicting the apocalypse in 2060 is the sort of thing that one would expect to see on the covers of tabloids. But in this case, the story is actually true. Now, ironically, the tabloids did not cover the story, and maybe it's because this story, you know, although it's counterintuitive to many people, is actually authentic. So maybe that's why the tabloids didn't cover it. But there's a likely another reason why somebody found the story about Newton in 2060 so compelling. When the story broke, storm clouds of war were on the horizon. You know, there was concern about the predicted war in Iraq, which is now a fulfilled prophecy. You know, not literally, you know, we're using that figuratively, but there were concerns about a predicted war in Iraq, which came true, which actually happened. Probably, in that fact, probably heightened the public's interest in Newton's date for the end of the world, particularly because the pending war involved the nation who occupies the land of ancient Babylon, which is a land that figures prominently in biblical prophecy and in Newton's own prophetic writings. Now, the head of the department in charge of the Newton collection in Jerusalem, in a TV interview, pointed directly to the threat of war in Iraq as one reason for the interest in the story. Reviewing footage of two Canadian television news items on the 2060 story, Snowblind says that he was struck by its placement in the midst of images of U.S. troops and helicopters arriving in Kuwait, along with statements about the pending war from presidential spokesman Ari Fleischer. Now, it's clear that whether we are religious or secular, we're living in apocalyptic times, right? At least people are looking for it, you know. India, Pakistan, North Korea, they're all rattling nuclear sabers. You have jetliners flying to skyscrapers laden with kerosene and human bodies. Terrorist strike around the world. You know, just recently, North Korea is shooting missiles to God knows where. And, you know, also beginning around the time of that documentary, that documentary aired, was the SARS outbreak, if you remember that. You know, appearing seemingly out of nowhere like a biblical plague. And, you know, but of course, like everything else, the media hyped it up more than what it really was. But so that was in people's minds. And then there were concerns about the degradation of our environment and fears of a coming eco-apocalypse, which, of course, people have been warning about for decades now, and it has yet to come. But in the context of these troubling realities. A dramatic story about the greatest scientist of all time predicting the end of the world carried with it added potency and poignancy. Now, strangely, a couple of months after the 2060 story broke, Sir Martin Rees, which is one of the one of today's leading scientists, he published a book entitled "Our Final Hour, Our Final Century in the UK," in which he argues that the human race has only a 50-50 chance of surviving the 21st century. So apocalypticism, hard word to say, is not the exclusive domain of the lunatic fringe on either sides of a religion or science. It's a broader phenomenon that reflects humanity's insecurity about the apparent fragility and tenuousness of our existence on planet Earth. You know, and I believe that when it's handled correctly, that can actually teach some humility. You know, when it's handled correctly, when it's not something that's like fear-based, but when it's actually handled correctly, that can teach us humility. We're not going to be around forever. There is going to be a time Jesus returns. And, you know, I believe that it was done by design why we don't have an exact date of Jesus' return. I think we as humans, and you know, we as Christians kind of criticize the fact that every generation has thought that they're the last generation. I used to be really critical of that too, but the reason I was critical of it was because I would look at the fringes of those groups. You know, you look at the crazy people that publish books and say the world is going to end next year or something. But that actual mindset, I actually think that mindset, not going off into lunatic fringe territory, but the mindset can be a healthy thing. You know, if we believe that there's at least a strong possibility we could be the last generation, that and not run off into lunatic land with it, that's going to keep us focused on task. We should be more motivated to reach people with the gospel, to get as many people saved as possible before the end comes. Now, again, I'm not talking about, like, you know, if an asteroid hits and blows up the world and we need to fear that, but I'm talking about if we think that Jesus could return in our lifetime, but we also have humility to know that we don't know everything and that might not be the case. That's a really healthy balance. And I think that that's where we as Christians want to be. And I actually think that's where a lot of Christians are. But it's just the lunatic fringe, they get the airtime. So the Harold Campings of the world get the airtime. Whereas people like you and me don't. You know, I'm not getting any interview requests from CNN to talk about the end of the world, for example, because I'm not predicting any. I don't set dates on that kind of stuff. Do I believe that we're in the last generation? I believe it's very possible, but it also wouldn't surprise me. You know, I'll tell you what, and this might come because of my new book that I'm putting out, Afterlife. I think more about my own death than I do about the end of the world. And the reason is because, again, the humility, we have to realize every generation has thought that theirs was going to be the last, and they've all been wrong. Now, how many people got too caught up in thinking that they were going to, let's say, get raptured out of here, and they didn't take any time contemplating their own physical death? And that to me would be kind of a scary place to be in. You know, if you're caught up, if you're thinking, I remember, for me personally, I remember when I was much younger, I never gave any thought to my own death whatsoever. And when I say thought, I don't mean fear, because of course we don't need to fear it, but we should think about it, you know. But I never gave any thought to it because I was so convinced that the rapture was going to happen at any day now that I just never gave it any thought. Now, anything could have happened. When I was in that mindset, I could have got hit by a car. I could have been killed. And I would have spent my life not giving any thought to what that moment was going to be like, or preparing myself for it, or really making sure that I'm right with Jesus. How many other people have been caught up in that? So that's where it can get dangerous. So now personally, I think more about my own death, because look, if the Lord returns, when the Lord returns, if it is in my lifetime, if it's a rapture, I don't really have to spend a lot of time thinking about that, because bam, we're caught up, you know. So if that is the correct interpretation of the rapture, that's not the same. If you're in the rapture, you're good, right? But your own death, everybody has died, right? I mean, so we have to pay attention to that. We should be paying attention to that. We should think about it, contemplate it, you know, not obsess and fear over it, but you know, we should get a handle as best we can on what's going to happen, what it's going to be like, what our standing with Jesus is, because that day ultimately is going to come, and when it does, there's no going back. There's no do-overs. You know, you're sealed in eternity at that point. So I think that's important. But that's that good balance. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm perfect at this, but this is what I say. That's that good balance. I mean, that's the balance that I'm striving for. That I try to strive for. A healthy balance between believing that it's a strong possibility that we could be in the last generation, and I do believe that. I wouldn't bet on it, but I do believe it. But at the same time, saying, okay, well, whatever happens with that, that's interesting, and we'll look into it. But I'll even do presentations about it. I'll go and speak at conferences about it. I do that all the time. I'll do shows about it. I mean, you know, we have the Peck Report, which deals a lot in Bible prophecy, and that's great. It's a good thing to do. But I want to use that as motivation to get out there, get people saved, tell people about Jesus. You know, support ministries who are going to Israel to preach the gospel to the Jewish people. And, you know, I want to do that, not focus so much on the doom and gloom stuff. Same with mortality, same with knowing that I'm going to die someday. I don't want to focus on the doom and gloom stuff over that, but I want to focus on, you know, what does that really mean? What is that going to be like? What's my standing with Jesus today, and could it be better tomorrow if I'm blessed to have a tomorrow? Because none of us are guaranteed another day on this earth, and none of us are getting out of this alive. So I think those are all really good points to keep in mind through this whole thing. So let's get back to Newton. Newton's theological and alchemical papers were kept from public scrutiny by the Portsmouth family until 1936, when they were sold at Sotheby's in London. The largest single collection of the theological papers was acquired by the Jewish scholar Abraham Shalom Ezekiel Yehuda. Now, when he died in 1951, he left them to the newly founded State of Israel. His will was contested, and thus the manuscripts did not arrive in Israel until 1969, when they were brought to the Jewish National and University Library in Jerusalem. It was only after this point that scholars had access to this particular collection of papers. But the manuscripts were only conveniently accessible to scholars after the majority of Newton's scientific, administrative, theological, and alchemical manuscripts were released on microfilm in 1991. So since 1991, there has been a revolution in Newton scholarship as the theological manuscripts began to be accessed in earnest by a small group of specialist scholars. A significant element of this revolution was the founding in 1998 of the Newton Project, based at Imperial College London and the University of Cambridge. This project has already begun the process of transcribing Newton's unpublished theological manuscripts in order to make them accessible to the world. Now, the BBC Two documentary revealed to the wider public that for the first time and in dramatic fashion, the results of this recent revolution in the understanding of Newton's life work. So the announcement about the 2060 date must be seen in this context. Now, although the initial Daily Telegraph article did not make that claim, some subsequent, or make this claim that we're getting to, some subsequent media reports mistakenly attributed the discovery of the 2060 date in Newton's writings to Snoblen himself. But he says that's not the case. Other media reports, which were based on direct interviews with Snoblen, correctly stated that the 2060 date has been known for quite some time, but only amongst Newton scholars and academic publications, unlike television documentaries, generally do not make news. So, at least three important Newton scholars, David Castellano, hope I'm pronouncing that right, Frank Manuel, and Richard Westfall, examined the Yehuda manuscripts, either in the original copies or, in the case of Westfall, in microfilm reproductions shortly after the arrival in Jerusalem. Now, in 1969, Castellano was likely the first to encounter the 2060 date, as he was the first scholar to examine the Yehuda collection. He published the 2060 date in his 1981 work called The Expanding Force in Newton's Cosmos, specifically on page 55. Westfall published the date in his 1980 biography of Newton, titled Never at Rest, which can be found in pages 816 to 817. Snowblind first came across the date in his own research, as opposed to reading it in Castileo or Westfall, when he was studying Yehuda MS-7 on microfilm while a PhD student at the University of Cambridge in 1997 while he did this. So he published the date in his 1999 British Journal for the History of Science paper called Isaac Newton Heretic, The Strategies of a Nicodemite, pages 391 to 392. The real story is not the discovery of the 2060 date, but that Newton's non-scientific work is being made known to the public in a spectacular manner. So now that we have all of the context here, how important was biblical prophecy for Isaac Newton? Extremely important. So for Newton, biblical prophecy forecast the divinely ordained events of the future. He believed the interpretation of biblical prophecy was, quote, no matter of indifferency, but a duty of the greatest moment, end quote. So prophecy allowed Newton to see history in advance. It also identified an evil apostate system, Babylon, that pure Christians must flee to avoid destruction and the wrath of God. So how does Bible prophecy work for Newton? Newton believed both in God and that the Bible was a revelation from God. He also believed that God was not bound by time as we humans are, allowing him to see the end from the beginning. So to use Newton's own words, he was convinced that, quote, the holy prophecies, end quote, of the scripture are nothing else than, quote, histories of things to come, end quote. And that is found in the Yehuda MS 1.1, folio 16 recto. Now, at the same time, biblical prophecy is written in highly symbolic language, much of it is, that requires skilled interpretation. Newton rose to this challenge as he attempted to discover the future of the world in the words of the prophets. Now, Newton only rarely added up the prophetic numbers. So why did Newton only rarely add up the prophetic numbers? Well, this was because he was wary of prophetic date setting. So Newton was worried that the failure of fallible human predictions based on divine prophecy would bring the Bible into disrepute. Ironically, in one of the two times that Newton wrote down the 2060 date, he railed against date setters. So Newton may have been aghast if he had known his prediction would be broadcast around the world in the 21st century. His calculations about the 2060 date were private musings that, you know, that he made on a scrap of paper, not really meant for the public. This was his own private notes. Now, ironically, the media coverage of the 2060 date has made Newton look like a date setter. But, you know, apparently Newton himself was very much against that. So, you know, it's one thing if we ourselves are trying to figure things out and we kind of keep that to ourselves. But to broadcast it out to the world, Newton had an issue with that. Now, let's take a look at the logic of Newton's apocalyptic calculations. Now, Newton, like many history prophetic commentators, prophetic commentators of his age believed that the prophetic time periods, 1260, 1290, 1335, and 2300 days, actually represent 1260, 1290, 1335, and 2300 years, using the what's called the day for a year principle. So for Newton, these time periods, especially in the 1260 years, represent the time span of the apostasy of the church. And for Newton, this means the Trinitarian church, chiefly the Catholics. So he looked in history for the likely date when the apostasy formally began. You know, one sign of this for him was the date when the papal church obtained temporal power. Now, from there, it was a simple matter of just adding the time period to the beginning. to the beginning date. But, you know, things are rarely so simple with Newton. So as already mentioned, Newton looked negatively towards date setting, and for this reason he rarely wrote out the end date for a time period once he had settled on a beginning date. There is a small number of exceptions, and the date 2060, found twice in the Yehuda manuscript at Jerusalem, is one of them. The date 2060 is also significant because, in addition to the rarity of end dates in Newton's writings, the calculation giving the 2060 date comes from fairly late in his life and is asserted with uncharacteristic vigor. Now, finding the commencement date was of great importance to Newton, since he had, you know, once he added the prophetic time periods to this date, he was able to determine when the great apocalyptic events of the end of the world were going to occur. Now, although Newton believed there would be wars and cataclysms around the time of the end, for him, this period was also the storm before the calm. So Newton's prophetic faith was, to him, it was like a positive element. So some of the prophetic time periods here. There is a time period of 1,260 days that appears in Daniel 7:25, which is, you know, as a time and times and the dividing of time, so a year, 2 years, and half a year. Daniel 12:7 says, as a time, times, and a half, or a year, 2 years, and half a year. Revelation 11:3 says 1,260 days. Revelation 12:6 says 1,260 days. And then Revelation 13:5 says 42 months. So then another one is the time period of 1,290 days, which appears in Daniel 12:11. There's also, in the following verse, there's a period of 1,335 days, that appears in Daniel 12:12. And then there's the time period of 2,300 days, which occurs in Daniel 8:14. So how did Newton arrive at the date 2060? That's what everybody wants to know. And, you know, we needed all of that back context to get here. So that's why I wanted to put all of this in one video instead of splitting it up into two. Now, this did not involve the use of anything as complicated as calculus, which he invented. But rather just simple arithmetic. So this simple arithmetic could be performed by a child, actually. So beginning in the 1670s and continuing to the end of his life in 1727, Newton considered several commencement dates, several beginning dates for the formal institution of the apostate imperial church. Now, earlier commencement dates include 607 and 609 AD. But as Newton grew older, he pushed the time of the end further and further into the future. So in Yehuda Manuscript 7, Newton twice gives 800 AD for the beginning of the Pope's supremacy. Now, the year 800 is a significant one in history, as it's the year Charlemagne was crowned Emperor of Rome in the West by Pope Leo III at St. Peter's in Rome. Since Newton believed that the 1260 years corresponded to the duration of the corruption of the church, he added 1,260 years to 800 AD, and he arrived at the date 2060 for the fall of Babylon. So, I mean, that's pretty easy to understand. That's pretty simple. But this date, again, it was for the fall of Babylon, or the cessation of the apostate church. Now, it seems that Newton believed the fall could perhaps begin somewhat before the end of the 1,260-year period and continue for a short time afterward. Whatever the precise chronology, Newton believed that sometime shortly after the fall of the corrupt, which again to him was the Trinitarian Catholic Church, Christ would return and set up a 1,000-year kingdom of God on earth. On page 144 of his Observations, 1733, Newton cited Daniel 7:26-27 as evidence of this, which says, "But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion, to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints for the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Now, Newton espoused a premillenarian eschatology, premillennial prophetic interpretation. And so he held that Christ would return to earth to establish the millennium. Now, there's two examples of the date 2060 in the Yehuda manuscript 7-3. And that's from the Jewish National and University Library in Jerusalem. Yeah, I'll switch to screen share so we can follow along with this, because there's some comments that go along with it too. Okay, this is 7.3, folio 3, verse 13. So then the time, times, and half a time are 42 months, or 1,260 days, or 3 years and a half, reckoning 12 months to a year and 30 days to a month, as was done in the calendar of the primitive year. So this is what we looked at before. And the days of short-lived beasts being put for the years of lived kingdoms, the period of 1,260 days, if dated from the complete conquest of the three kings, which is AC 800, will end AC 2060. It may end later, but I see no reason for its ending sooner. This I mention not to assert the time of the end shall be, but to put a stop to the rash conjectures of fanciful men who are frequently predicting the time of the end, and by doing so bring the sacred prophecies into discredit as often as their predictions fail. Christ comes as a thief in the night, and it is not for us to know the times and seasons which God hath put into his own breast. So even here, you know, he's railing against date setters. So here's some comments. This excerpt demonstrates that Newton was not only reluctant to set dates, but that he was convinced the end would not come in his lifetime. He took seriously biblical passages that assert that no one except God knows the time of the end. Nevertheless, this excerpt shows that even Newton was fascinated with the prophetic conundrum of the date for the return of Christ and the beginning of the millennium. Finally, although Newton's statement was meant to demonstrate that the time of the end was several centuries away from his perspective, history has now caught up with his predictions, which helps explain the current interest in his apocalyptic calculations. All right, let's look at the second one. This is 7.30, folio 8R. And we'll look at the comments too. Let's see how far these go down. All right. Prop 1, the 2300 prophetic days did not commence before the rise of the little horn of the he-goat. Those days did not commence after the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple by the Romans, AD 70. The time, times, and half a time did not commence before the year 800, in which the Pope's supremacy commenced. They did not commence after the reign of Gregory VII in 1084. The 1290 days did not commence before the year 842. They did not commence after the reign of Pope Gregory VII, 1084. The difference between the 1290 and 1335 days are a part of the 7 weeks. Therefore, the 2300 years do not end before the year 2132, nor after 2370. The time, times, and half time do not end before 2060, nor after 2344. The 1290 days did not begin, and again, this should read end, did not end before 2090, and, you know, again, Newton might mean 2132, nor after 1374. And again, Newton probably means 2374. So we looked at those before, so we can look at some of these comments now. These calculations are written on a letter slip addressed to Sir Isaac Newton, and thus dating from after 1705, when Newton was knighted. In fact, the shaky handwriting suggests the date of composition late in Newton's life. The manuscript fragment contains a number of interesting features, including the remnants of the red wax seal, and a series of mathematical calculations. Thus, this sheet exhibits both mathematical calculations and calculations for the end of the world. It is this manuscript fragment that is shown at the end of the BBC Two documentary, Newton, the Dark Heretic. When viewing the Yehuda manuscripts in Jerusalem on December 9th, 2002, the day before the Jerusalem footage was shot for the documentary, I, and I think this is Snowblind talking here, selected this manuscript as one of a series of worthy candidates to film. My reasons were as follows. Not only does this letter slip show a date in Newton's hand that is relevant to us today, but it is also visually interesting with its red wax seals, mathematical calculations, and prophetic chronology, all of which helps provide an insight into the range of Newton's thought. Of course, only one thing emerged from this manuscript in the documentary, the date 2060 AD. Okay, so Newton actually didn't believe in a literal sense that the world would end in 2060. So for Newton, again, you know, just to kind of reiterate this, because it's important to understand what Newton actually believed. For Newton, 2060 AD would be more like a new beginning. You know, it would be the end of an old age and the beginning of a new era. You know, the era that Jews refer to the Messianic Age and the era premillennial Christians, premillennial Christians term the Millennium Kingdom or Kingdom of God. So Newton was convinced that Christ would return around this date and establish a global kingdom of peace. So it would stand to reason if you're a pre-rapture, a premillennial rapture believer, it would stand to reason if Christ returns on 2060, then the beginning of the tribulation would be what 2053, something like that, and you know the rapture sometime before that. But again, it's all conjecture. It's all opinions, and even Newton railed against date setters. So we're not gonna. We're not doing that, but if you do the math, that's kind of what would be. But he believed that Christ would return around this date and establish a global kingdom of peace. Babylon, which again to him was the global Trinitarian church, Catholic church, would also fall and the true gospel would be preached openly. Before the second coming, the Jews would return to Israel according to the predictions made in Bible prophecy. And of course, that occurred in 1948. The temple would be rebuilt as well. We are seeing the beginning signs of that now, and that very well could happen very soon. Now, slightly before or around the time of Christ's return, the Great Battle of Armageddon would take place, in his opinion, when a series of nations, the Gog and Magog confederacy of Ezekiel's prophecy, would invade Israel. Christ and the saints would then intervene to establish a worldwide 1,000-year kingdom of God on earth. Citing the prophet Micah, Newton believed this kingdom would usher in a time of peace and prosperity, a time when people would, quote, beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, end quote, and when, quote, nations shall not lift up a sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore, end quote. And that, of course, comes from Micah chapter 4, verse 3. Now, although the documentary chose not to focus on this message of hope, Newton did believe that there would be a positive outcome to the war and destruction that would take place at the time of the end. Newton took seriously the prophetic vision of world peace found in Isaiah 2 and Micah 4, a vision that sees Jerusalem as the beginning of peace. So it is thus perhaps appropriate that the largest collection of Newton's prophetic papers now resides in Jerusalem. So why are his theological and prophetic beliefs important to our understanding of Newton? It's because Newton was not a scientist in the modern sense of that term. Or you could say that scientists today are not real scientists in the actual sense of the word. You know, ancient scientists were you know, they used science as a tool to understand the material world, but they also had a spiritual side to them. Many of them did. And Newton fell in that camp. But, you know, Newton was more of like a natural philosopher. So, you know, practiced from the Middle Ages to the 18th century, natural philosophy included not only the study of nature, but also the study of God's hand at work in nature. Newton was committed to a notion of natural philosophy that saw the discovery of God and his attributes as its chief end. So for this reason, any serious study of Newton's natural philosophy must include an understanding of his theological views. So for example, Newton's famous concept of absolute space and time were fundamentally based on his notion of God's omnipresence and eternal duration. It's also clear from his private manuscripts that Newton believed the ideal natural philosopher would also be a priest of nature. So for Newton, there was no impermeable barrier between religion and what we now call science. Throughout his life, Newton labored to discover God's truth, whether in nature or scripture. Although he recognized disciplinary distinctions, Newton believed that truth was one. So Newton's study of nature and scripture were in a certain sense two halves of a whole, the discovery of the mind of God. Now there's more information on Newton's attempts to date the end of the world. You can find further details on Newton's end time calculations on pages 391 and 393 of Snoblen's paper entitled Isaac Newton Heretic from the year 1999, and pages 106 and 108 of his paper The Mystery of This Restitution of All Things from 2001. Both these essays are available on the website that the Isaac-Newton, is that .com or .org? That is .org. Isaac-Newton.org. You can find those papers there. More elaborate studies of Newton's eschatology appears in Snoblen's paper, A Time and Times and the Dividing of Time, Isaac Newton, The Apocalypse in 2060 AD, and in his forthcoming book, which might be out now. I don't know the date of this, but entitled Isaac Newton Heretic. So you can check that out. Very interesting things. Originally at the top of the program, I said that I was going to do a video series on this. I think that we covered it all here. And I do have some other notes that I haven't taken a look at yet. I'm gonna conclude this video, and I'm gonna take a look at those. And if there's anything there that we haven't already covered, we'll do some more videos on it. But it's really interesting. I of course would love to know what you think. If you're viewing this on YouTube, leave a comment in the comment section below. If not, go to dailyrenegade.com, become a member today. $10 a month, $100 or $100 a year. It's absolutely worth it. You get access to full videos of all sorts. From everything that we put out. Just go to dailyrenegade.com and check it out. But anyway, I hope that was entertaining and informative and all the things that it should be. It's definitely an interesting topic for me. So, and again, if you, like I said before, if you're a chronic pain sufferer, if you want to try out some CBD or Kratom, you can do that by clicking on the link in the description below if you're viewing this on YouTube. And if not, just go to dailyrenegade.com. You can find the ads there. There's also an ad for the Chosen, which is an excellent movie. You should check that out too. All right, everybody. Thank you so much.